The fire enemy of love is, of course, hate, and there's no difficulty in that. But the near enemy is attachment, and often also called affection. And it is an enemy because of the fact that if we are really strongly attached to one or several people, we're stuck to them. Attachment means being stuck to. And you will find it difficult to expand the heart into the infinite, where love becomes a natural way of being and not a reciprocal arrangement or an answer to something that we find lovable. Love is actually, and metta in the Buddhist words, is something which is of infinite possibility and can be extended to everything that comes in within our experience. Most of the things that come into our experience are people. And all of us have daily, hourly, minutely opportunities to practice with the people we meet. Now, even here, where you're keeping noble silence, that doesn't stop one from practicing love. On the contrary, it might be even easier. If nobody says anything that we can object to, we will find it easier. And wherever we are, we meet people. There are lots of them on this little planet of ours. And we have so many relationships which are a quite neutral relationships. They don't seem to have anything in them other than utilitarian purposes, like the postman, or a salesperson in a shop, or a tradesman, anything like that. Well, we can practice love on all of them. Sometimes people say, well, but maybe they don't want to be loved. That's an impossibility. First of all, everybody wants to be loved. That's a fact, and it's a law of nature. But secondly, it's not verbalization. We don't walk up to the postman and say, I love you. He might like it, actually, but it would be rather strange, wouldn't it? It's depending entirely on what we feel within ourselves. Obviously, we feel, if we haven't practiced, we feel absolutely nothing. The only thing we might feel is if he comes very late, we might feel upset. Why is he so late? I want my meal earlier. Or something like that. And the salespeople in a shop, or the cashier at the cash register, what do we feel? Nothing. Nothing at all. Well, that's where we can practice. These are the people that are sort of neutral to us. We can practice with the people very much so that we are attached to. Can we loosen this attachment to become a little more independent with our emotions? Can we love them without having to have them? It's a very important practice. Hardly anything that's equally important. The only other thing which is equally important is not to believe what we're thinking and to substitute the unwholesome with the wholesome. Loving people without having them. It's a wonderful practice. And it actually creates within the heart a freedom to love. It makes it free to love anyone. So
that's a practice with those we love. Then there's a practice with the neutral ones. And then, of course, we have those that irk us, those that we don't like. They're doing all the wrong things. They don't protect our environment, or they are having the wrong politics, or they don't talk nice to us, or they're not supportive, or they don't help us, or whatever they're doing wrong. Well, those are the ones, of course, that we have to work with too, maybe a little more difficult. But then, that doesn't matter, because we know how to do the easy things. We have already perfected our ability to dislike, to reject, to criticize. Now we're doing something entirely different. We're perfecting our ability to love that which we may not find at all lovable. Now, if we have somebody in our life whom we think is doing all the wrong things, it's very foolish doing all the wrong things. Well, that may be so, maybe quite right, it's quite possible. But that person is at that stage of doing those things. There are, first of all, karmic resultants for that person, and we have already discussed karma and put it into context with our thinking. Well, equally so, our emotions make karma. Every time we get angry, we make bad karma. Every time we're loving, we make good karma. We don't have to say a word. We don't have to do a thing. We just have to feel it. So a person whom we think is doing all the wrong things, foolish or not wholesome, that may be that person's karmic resultant. They're at that stage of doing it. And maybe they'll even learn from it. So the only reaction to that kind of situation is compassion with that person. Not anger because they're doing the wrong things. And if those things that they're doing wrong have any kind of repercussion on us, the repercussion is much stronger if we on top of it dislike the person. We've got two repercussions. We've got the thing that doesn't work the way we want it, and we've got the dislike. Isn't it foolish to make oneself more unhappy than necessary? But if we see that the person is doing these things because they are under the mistaken impression that whatever it is they're doing will bring them happiness, it's not so difficult to have compassion and a feeling of warmth towards that difficult person. So we have three kinds of people. We have the neutral ones, we have the loved ones, and we have the difficult ones. And we need to work with all of them. The neutral ones are those that we don't have any particular feeling for. Some people find it quite easy to love nature. Flowers, bushes, trees, meadows, valleys, mountains, clouds, moon, star, all those things. Or go right ahead and love them, but don't forget about people. The more we can love anything, whatever it may be, the more we get to know that feeling. And the more we get to know that feeling, the easier it will be for us to actually practice it. Practicing it doesn't mean that we have to go around with a silly grin on our face and tell everybody, I love everybody, I mentioned that already. It just means what's going on within. It means that safety and security of a pure heart. The impurity of the heart gives us a lot of trouble. And it's a matter of practice. And it's not done immediately. It's something we can work on. And I think I've given the possibilities that we can work with. Joy with others is also a very important aspect, and I'll briefly mention it now, because it creates joy. And joy is a prerequisite for meditation. We're always hoping to get joy out of meditation, which we will eventually, or we will if we can be concentrated enough for the absorption. But without joy to sit down with, we can't concentrate. A mind which is concerned with problems or with worry or with any kind of negativity won't be able to meditate. We can, if we have a mind that is too worried, too discursive, too negative, we can at times find ourselves in a sort of cloudy limbo where we don't know what's going on at all. Don't mistake that for meditation. It's not. The way to recognize the two differences are, if it's a cloudy limbo that we are in and don't know what's going on, after the meditation we feel tired and we want to lie down. And if we've been actually concentrated and experienced the concentrated meditation or any of the absorptions, we feel energetic. There's additional energy in the mind. It's very easy to see. So one can actually find out for oneself. If there's tiredness, then it wasn't meditation. So I'm mentioning that because these possibilities all exist. And one of the things to counteract the one that's not useful is to sit down with joy. Joy at being able to practice, joy at hearing the Dhamma, and joy also if we see anybody who seems to be sitting really well and seems to be quite concentrated. Now, whether they are or are not is none of our business. But the thing that very often arises in the mind is not joy, but it is comparison. Oh, look at that person. They can really do it. I can't. I wonder if I ever will. They've probably been meditating a long time already. Well, looks like they're concentrated. Maybe they're not, huh? So the mind goes on and on and on and talks about all sorts of things instead of being joyful. Just being joyful that there's somebody sitting there nicely and it looks as if they're concentrated. Period. That's it. Finished. And we have joy with them. The same as in everyday life, of course. Something nice happens to someone. And we happen to like that person. We don't find it so difficult to have joy with them. Well, let's say it happens to our own child. Gets really good marks in school. Or finally graduates from university. Oh, well, we're really joyful. But the same happens to the kid down the street, and we hear about it. Are we really equally joyful? Investigate. In fact, it's probably leaving us entirely cold. Said, oh, yeah. I remember that kid when he used to throw his football around my, oh, my garden. So, joy with others has not only the result of being able to be joyful when one meditates, but but it has the result of having more joy in the world. Our enemy is envy, of course. But when we are joyful, we also exude joyfulness, and other people have benefit from that. And there's so little joy in the world that, and we also ourselves don't have so many occasions where we can really feel joyful, that if we have others that are having a joyful situation, we can expand on that joy within ourselves, and then there'll be that much more joy in the world. And anyone who is joyful can get the benefit of the infinite consciousness or the cosmic consciousness, which contains joy. But we can only get the benefit of that if we already have it within us, so that it's like an echo. We only get it as an echo. If we have anger in us, it's the same thing. We get more from the cosmic consciousness as an echo. In fact, if we are perpetually angry, which some people are, not so many, but some are, they think that there's nothing but anger in the world. That's a final conclusion they come to. It's foolish, but then, of course, mankind is foolish. Otherwise, we wouldn't kill each other. So joy with others, sympathetic joy, is a very important aspect of our own inner joy, but also of adding to the joy in the world. Each one of us is the world. As small and insignificant as each one of us might be, we are a link in the chain. And if that link is strong and happy, it certainly strengthens the chain. We need to remember that when the negativities overcome us, it's so easy to forget. And actually, when you hear it, it's quite obvious, isn't it, the whole thing? One could actually say, so what's new about all that? The only thing that's new about it is that we constantly forget and follow our instincts and our impulses. And if we don't forget, we have a different possibility. The last one, the fourth one, the equanimity, is one of the seven factors of enlightenment, and we'll get to that in due course. So I won't mention it now at all. It's considered to be the highest of all emotions, and it is actually the only one of the four emotions which is a factor of enlightenment, because it sort of embeds within it all other three. So we'll leave that until we get to that. To recapitulate, the same what we do with our thoughts, we do with our emotions. We substitute. We drop the unwholesome, substitute the unwholesome with the wholesome. Or, if we can't do either, we go off the unwholesome, the negative emotion, and try to be joyful about a beautiful flower, until we get back with a calm heart and mind to practice love towards the difficult person. It's a constant practice path. It's an important thing to remember that practice does not mean sitting on a little pillow. Buddha never sat on a little pillow. He sat on a heap of grass, kusa grass, it says. But maybe he shaped it like a pillow, I don't know. Sitting on a pillow is a means to an end. The practice is from morning to night. We don't make karma with our dreams. Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? At least we are relieved from that. But from morning to night, it's a practice path. And the more often we forget, the more difficult it becomes. And then we need to be reminded, and then we start again. And then after a while, it sort of peters out, because we think other things are more important. How could anything else be more important? What could be more important than a loving heart, inner peace, and inner happiness? Maybe you should take your diaries and write down what you think could be more important. And if you don't find anything that's more important, then write those three things down as being most important. So that when you start forgetting to practice, maybe you can look it up and say, well, that's right. I did think that was most important. And then you can also maybe write down the things that in your daily life take you away from that practice. You see, it's not a matter of time. It's not one has to make one's living and then one can't have do these other things. A loving heart is one is able to arouse while one is doing any kind of work. It doesn't matter what it is. Or mindfulness. In fact, in many types of work, mindfulness is absolutely essential. One has to pay attention to what one is doing. So as one pays attention to what one is doing, one is also without any negativity. And we don't, in our daily work, if we have unwholesome thoughts, we can drop them and change them just as well as we can here. So none of the things that we think we have to do first before we can do that really need to be done first. All this happens within us in our daily living. We'll put the attention on the breath for just a few moments. And I'd like you to investigate within yourself and in your memory under what circumstances and also how often there are negative reactions within you towards another person. Have a look and see how often this happens. Be quite truthful about it to yourself, and then try to see what the trigger might be, why it's happening. And now think of exactly that self-same person that you may have remembered as having had negative feelings for, and see whether you can change that, substitute it with a loving feeling, a compassionate feeling, an embracing feeling. Not taking into consideration any of the reasons or justifications for having been negative. Just changing. See if you can do it for that same person that you remembered having been negative about. Think of the people whom you usually meet in your daily activities. Maybe at work or wherever you meet certain people over and over again. And investigate whether you're quite indifferent emotionally towards them. And then try to see whether you can feel warmth, an embracing feeling, feeling of togetherness, helpfulness, care and concern for these people whom you meet again and again in your daily life. Whoever comes to mind, one or several, doesn't matter. Now, think of those people, or one person, with whom you are particularly closely connected. And check out your feeling for that person. How does that feeling differ from your feelings for others? Is there more warmth, more care? More concern, more dependence. And now investigate whether this particular person or persons, whether you could love this person in the same way without that person actually being around. Being far away, not coming to visit, can you have the same love? And if you find that you can't, then investigate why not. Now have a look inside of yourself and recognize the difficulties. The difficulties that any human being has. Difficulty in loving, in wholesome thinking, any kind of difficulty. Just have a look at it. And then embrace yourself with compassion for that difficulty. Don't blame. Don't criticize. Have that compassionate feeling of warmth and care, of understanding and accepting, and embrace yourself with that. And now have a look at the person or persons towards whom you've had negative feeling, rejection, and see the same difficulties in that person that you found in yourself, and embrace that person with compassion. And now we'll use those people that we feel quite indifferent about, whom we know and meet, but where we haven't really aroused a feeling of love. And again, we see the same difficulties that we have ourselves, and we can embrace them with compassion and have that feeling of togetherness. And now we'll think of that person or the persons with whom we have the closest connection, where there is a feeling of warmth and love, but also judgment and criticizing. See the difficulties within yourself, see the same ones in that person, and embrace that person with compassion. We're all in the same boat.